Okay, good morning. Thank you very much for coming. Let's start again on the bottom of Daf Beis Amud Beis, page 2b. And we're, again, as we learned yesterday, the topic at the beginning of the Masechta is the issue of Edim Zomimim, false witnesses. As Roger asked, it's really interesting that we believe the second group and not the first group. It's just two against two. So why should we believe the second group over the first group? So that's a good question. There are different answers that are given to that question on one level. As Fred said, it's Gzeiras HaKasav. That's the decree of the Pasuk. The Pasuk says that if the first group comes and says an event that they saw Reuven borrow, they saw Reuven steal, they saw Reuven kill on a particular date, and then a second group comes and they say, you could never have seen what you say you saw. On that day, you were not there, you were with us somewhere else. So the second group is believed. The first group is now rendered into false witnesses who were plotting to harm their friend. And it'll be done to them what they were trying to do against their friend. The Mishnah then taught, though, sometimes you can't do to them what you wanted to do, what they wanted to do to their friend. Let's say they wanted to make their friend have to run to exile. They wanted to turn their friend into a halal, a non-Kohen. The Brisa adds, they wanted to make their friend have to be sold as a Jewish slave, or they wanted to make their friend have to pay the atonement payment for an ox killing somebody, so that we can't enforce on them, so then they'd be given lashes. Then the Braisa said, Rabbi Akiva said, Edim Zomimim don't pay based on their own admission. So this really takes us back to Masechet Bava Kamma. In Masechet Bava Kamma, we learned that there are two types of payments. There's knas, there are fines, and there's mamon, there is logical payments. So if I damage someone, that I should pay for the damage, that's logic. It makes sense. That's called mamon. But then there are payments that logic wouldn't have said that I should pay for, that I pay for humiliation, right? Humiliation is not really damage. So his face turned colors. I have to pay for that. So that's already a knas. That's a fine. The Torah says what one of the greatest examples of a fine is that a thief, a ganav, pays double. Because that's not logical. Logical is you give back what you took. But he has to pay a fine, another amount. That's a fine. The Torah says about the double payment, Asher Yarshiun Elohim Yeshalim Shnaim L'Re'ehu. He that Elohim, meaning the courts, convict, will pay two to his friend. So that implies that when it comes to the payment of two, it's only when the court convicts him, not when he convicts himself. Asher Yarshiun Elohim, he that the court convicts, V'lo L'Marshias Atzmo, not if he convicts himself. So now Rabbi Akiva, in this Braisa, who says that Edim Zomim, the false witnesses, they don't pay based on their own admission, that they're included in that phrase, Asher Yarshiun Elohim V'lo Prat L'Marshias Atzmo, that if they convict themselves, they don't have to pay. That must mean Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that Edim Zomim are a knas. It's a fine of some sort. And that's why if it comes from themselves, there is no obligation. So now let's start at that point. Two dots, three lines from the bottom of Beis Amud Beis. Mishum Rabbi Akiva Amru, in the name of Rabbi Akiva, they said that in Edim Zomim, just like they don't have to pay the kofar, and they wouldn't have to pay these other situations, they also don't pay if they themselves are the ones admitting. Ask the Gemara, my time is Rabbi Akiva, what's the reasoning of Rabbi Akiva? Answer the Gemara, Kasavar, he's of the opinion, Knasahu. He thinks that the punishments given to the false witnesses are not logical. They are a fine. They are an excess of what we would expect. And whenever you have a fine, you don't have to pay it if it's coming from the person himself. Otherwise, we didn't know about it. So I'm a rabbi. So now rabbi says, how do you know that Edim Zomim is a fine? Where do you see in Edim Zomim, obligations that are beyond logic? So Teidat, understand it from the following. Share lo asu maisa. They didn't do something. One of the rules of Edim Zomim, as Izzy was struggling with yesterday, is the Torah says, Vasisem lo, due to the false witness, Kasher Zamam lasos lachiv, like he was plotting to do against his friend. The lo kasher asa, not as it was actually done against the friend. So if, let's say, witnesses come, and they say that Reuven killed somebody, and they're cross-examined, it works, the courts end up killing Reuven. But then, a month later, other witnesses come and say, that day that you claimed you saw the whole thing, you couldn't have been because you were with us somewhere else. We would not punish them because it's too late. It was already done. It's only when it's what they're plotting that they can be punished. So that's an amazing thing. They didn't actually carry anything out. Nothing actually happened. The money wasn't taken. The death didn't happen. And yet they get punished. V'neherugin. They can get killed. U'mishalmin. Or they can have to pay. So that's clearly a fine. It's not what you would think intuitively. Amar Rav Nachman of Nachman said, Teda, what's the proof that Eidim Zomim, that the false witnesses get punished with a fine punishment, and therefore if it comes from their own admission, that's why they wouldn't have to carry it out. Sharei Mamon Biyad Bailim, because here the money is still in the hands of the owner, still in the hands of the person that they're testifying against, and nevertheless, U'mishalman, and nevertheless, they need to pay. My new... What do you mean the money is still in their hands? Delo asu maisa, because nothing is carried out yet. It's kasher zama, velo kasher asa. Haina de Rabba, that's the exact same explanation that Rabba gave. You're right. Ema, so just change it. V'chein amar Rav Nachman. And Rav Nachman also said this way. So again, according to Rabbi Akiva, let's say you have one set of witnesses, they come and they testify that stole from B, and then another set of witnesses come in and say about the first set, can't be, they couldn't have seen A steal from B, because at that time and that they weren't in that place, they were with us somewhere else. So then the first set of witnesses clearly is thrown out, we're not going to make A pay. But if, let's say, they leave the court before the court says to them, you need to pay, the court just threw out their testimony, and then they run to another court, and in that other court they say, you know, we messed up in the first court. We lied, and we were about to be convicted. So since the second court is only hearing about this from their own words, so that's the rule that one who admits to a fine obligation doesn't have to pay it. What if we're only finding out about the fine obligation from the person himself, the thief or the damager, or in this case the Eid Zomim? They don't get obligated. Moda b'knas pater. Why is this a fine obligation? As we just said, because they are being obligated even before the crime really happens, before the damage occurs. Okay.
It sounds like what Rabbi Kiva is saying is novel, meaning someone holds differently, but it seems weird to hold something differently, because whenever you admit something, you don't get a knas, right?
You don't get a knas. Well, you might define Eidzom as not a knas. You might say, this is not a knas, this is mammon. It makes sense. They committed a terrible crime of testifying in court, you know, falsely. You know, they tried to harm. The trying to harm is a terrible thing. So you could say it's not a knas.
Like, I wouldn't hold those shame by myself, whatever, it's an issue.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So if I understand the Rabbi, that if I still, I'm Nesham, I still didn't pay it.
That's right.
And the Eidzom Zomim coming,
right,
and say, yes, I should pay, but I didn't pay it, and they find right. Them Zomim,
right.
They don't have to pay nothing. Even they try to pay.
They won't have to pay if they go to another court, and in that other court they admit,
yes, yes.
And the other court didn't know about it until they admitted. We're going to see further in the Gemara.
That's very interesting.
I'm Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, another law, Eid Zomim, a false witness, Mishal Mufi Chelko. He only has to pay according to his portion. So Gemara says, what does that mean? My Mishal Mufi Chelko. What does it mean he pays according to his portion? Elam, if it's the point, a high Mishalim Palgav, a high Mishalim Palgav, when you have two witnesses and they both say that Reuven stole $100 from Shimon, and now another set of witnesses come and are disproving them. So then one pays 50 and the other one pays 50. Tanina, that's a Mishnah, later on. Mishal Shundu Mamon, you have to have like a guy running in between them in terms of the money to say, you pay your portion, you pay your portion, you pay your portion. They Mishal Shundu Malkos. But when you have false witnesses who try to wrongfully convict someone to get lashes, so they get lashes instead, so we don't divide up the lashes. Each one gets a full 39. So that's a Mishnah that says that we divide up the money. So what was Rav Yehuda Marav saying that the Eid Zomim pays according to his portion? Proposal number one. Ela kagon de itzom chad minayu. Let's say two witnesses come to testify that Reuven stole from Shimon, and one of those two witnesses is turned into an Eid Zomim, because people come and say, no, you were with us at that time, but only one of them was, not both. The Meshalim Pagadi Day, so then he has to pay his half. What do you mean? Umim Meshalim, does he pay at all? For a time we'll do a brisa. Ein Eid Zomim Meshalim Mamon, Achizum Ushneim. There is no concept of false witnesses until they are both turned into false witnesses. If only one is a false witness, that's nothing, because one person's not a full witness yet. So Amar Rava, so Rava suggested another proposal. What did Rav Yehuda mean in the name of Rav when he says that an Eid Zomim pays according to his portion? But Omer, not when he's an Eid Zomim, it's just when he backtracked. He came in and said, Reuven stole from Shimon. Then he turns around and said, you know what, I was really lying. Bomer, Eid Sheker He'adati. I lied. Reuven didn't steal from Shimon. So since when he was trying to do his cause, Reuven a loss, he needs to pay his share of that loss. What do you mean? How could he backtrack? Kol Kamini, does he have the power to backtrack? We have a rule. Kevan Shehikid, once witnesses testify, Shuveno Chozer Umagad, they're not allowed to come back and testify again about that topic. That's it. We accepted their words. They took the risk. That's it. They can't now come back and retract it. There's no such thing as pulling back a testimony. So what does Rav Yehuda Marav mean that an Eid Zomim pays according to his portion? Just the literal meaning that when you have two witnesses testifying falsely, they each pay half. I don't need an Amora, Rav Yehuda Marav, to tell me this. It's a Mishnah. Ella, so what is the lesson of Rav Yehuda Marav? In the following case, it's a Rabbi Akiva type case. Bomer, when a single witness, you know, he has a friend. Let's call the friends Yehuda and Yaakov. They were witnesses against Reuven. They claim that Reuven stole from Shimon. Bomer, when he says, hey, Adnu, we came in to say Reuven stole from Shimon. But then, Vuhuzamnu, Bebezdin Ploni. But then another set of witnesses came. Before the court can convict Reuven, another set of witnesses came and said, hey, Yehuda and Yaakov, you're with us on this day, somewhere else. So the court threw out our testimony, and now it looked like we were going to be in jeopardy. The court was going to convict us. So we came here now. And I'm telling you that we were about to be convicted. We were Edom Zomim. So now, come on. So what does it mean he has to pay his portion? He's saying that that's what happened. His friend is saying it didn't happen. His friend is denying that they were about to become Edom Zomim. So since he is saying that he was going to become an Eid Zomim, he has to live with the ramifications of his words. He has to pay his portion. His friend is denying that that was where they were going. The friend doesn't have to pay. And that's Rav Yehuda Marav's Kiddush. So 1 second, come on, that would be like who? Delok Rabbi Akiva. That's against Rabbi Akiva then. Because Rabbi Akiva says that if our court hears from the witness that they were about to be an Eid Zomim, then the witness doesn't have the status of Eid Zomim, because he's mo de beknas. He's admitting to the fine. Deik Rabbi Akiva, because if you're going to say it's like Rabbi Akiva, however, but he says, af enu mishalim al pi atzmo. One of the laws of the false witness is that the false witness cannot convict himself, and he wouldn't pay if we're only hearing about it because of him. So, okay, the case is, here it can work according to Rabbi Akiva too. Ella, the case like this. Bomer, where Yaakov comes into our court, and he says like this, I was with my friend Yehuda. Hey, Adnu, we testified against Reuven. And then, before Reuven could be convicted, Vuhuzamnu, Bebezdin Ploni. Another set of witnesses came, and they turned us into Edom Zomim, into false witnesses. They testified that we were with them at the time that we claimed that we saw the events of Reuven. And not only was our testimony thrown out, Vichuyavnu Mamon. That first court judged us, and the first court convicted us, and they said to us, go pay the money. Before we actually paid, we came here, and I'm telling you. So now it's not that because of his admission we know about it. It's true that it's because it's his admission that tells us this, but it's not his admission that convicts him. Go back to the pasuk. The pasuk says, "Asher yarshiyun Elohim yishalim shnayim l'reyehu." Which type of thief pays the double payment? He who gets convicted by the court, that the court made him into a rasha. Not if he makes himself into a rasha. This man was made a rasha by a court. He was made a rasha by court number one. Now he's coming and telling court number two. So since he was already made a rasha by court number one, his admission works. In terms of himself, he needs to pay. Now his friend, Yaakov, is claiming it never happened. So court number two says to Yaakov, Okay, in regards to yourself, you're believed. We're not going to make you pay. But in regards to your friend, he says that you guys were both Edom's Zomim, so he has to pay his share. So therefore, like this, Sakadai Tachamina would have thought to say, since his words that he and his friend were convicted don't impact his friend, so maybe it doesn't impact him too. This is where we have Rav Yehuda Marav. Rav Yehuda Marav says, sometimes an Eid Zomim pays half. What's the Chiddush? The Mishnah already says an Eid Zomim pays half. The Chiddush is like this. When the Eid Zomim comes to a second court and tells the second court that doesn't know anything, I was convicted and my friend was convicted, and his friend says, no, we were not convicted. You're making up a story to try to ruin me. So that's the Chiddush. Since he says he was convicted, he has to live with the ramifications of his words. He needs to pay. His friend doesn't need to pay. His friend claims they weren't convicted. But since it's only his words, so he has to pay half. He doesn't have to pay the full amount. That's what Rav Yehuda Marav was saying, but it's really not impacting the law of Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva is saying where it was before the conviction in court number one, the false witness comes into court number two and tells court number two about the crime that he did, so then court number two won't convict him. But that's not what's happening here. Here he was already convicted in court number one. Okay, the next Mishnah is a very exciting Mishnah. The Mishnah, again, we're dealing with this concept of Eid Zomim. And what we're going to now deal with is, I guess, exciting for someone like Kim. Like, how do you value all sorts of futures? Whenever you get involved in buying futures, so there's a risk involved, right? Maybe it will happen, maybe it won't happen. So that has to provide a discount because there's a risk. And then how do you deal with Eid Zomim who get involved in futures? How do you value what they need to pay? So here's the case of the Mishnah. Me'idim anu es ish ploni shegiresh es ishto velo nasan la ksubasa. So what's the case? Two witnesses come and they say, we testify that Yaakov divorced his wife Leah in front of us. We saw Yaakov give the get. Then Leah said, okay, now that you gave me the get, you owe me the ksuba, you owe me the 200 silver zuz, the 200 silver shekel. And Yaakov says, no, I'm not going to give it to you. He obfuscated, he didn't give it. So now the next day, the witness is coming, they're saying, we saw yesterday in this place, Yaakov give a get and not give a ksuba. So what are they trying to do? They're trying to make Yaakov have to pay the ksuba. Okay, and then they become Edom Zomim. As the court case is rolling on, other people come in and say, yesterday you couldn't have been here seeing Yaakov give a get and not give a ksuba, because yesterday you were with us in India. We just came back this morning. Okay, so that's the story. But one second, they're not really trying to cause Yaakov a loss, because Yaakov's going to ultimately have to pay the ksuba. If Yaakov dies, if Yaakov does divorce his wife, he has to pay the ksuba. So it's not really that they're trying to create a full loss, they're trying to move up when the ksuva gets paid. Now that's an interesting thing. How do you evaluate that? Someone who's what is that amount? It's not the full amount of the ksuba, because the full amount of the ksuba would have been paid anyway. But they're trying to make that full amount paid earlier than it would have been paid. So how do we evaluate it? So that's what the Mishnah says. Hello, take notice. Whether today or tomorrow, the husband's going to have to give her the ksuba. These witnesses were trying to make him give it to her early. So what is the number on this damage? So here's a proposal, and we're going to see in the Gemara, if she dies first, then there is no ksuba. So now here's the proposal of how to create the valuation. We'll see the Gemara doesn't take this literally. So the Mishnah says, "Omdim kama adam rotza litein b'ksubasa shel zu." So we make an assessment. How much is a person willing to pay to buy her ksuba? Now that's a future contract. The guy's going to give her money now to get the chance of getting her ksuba, which would mean that if the husband divorces her, he's going to get a payout. If the husband dies, he's going to get a payout. But if they stay married and she dies, then there is no payout. Then his money for the ksuba was a loss. So he's taking a risk. How much would somebody pay to buy a woman's ksuba? She'im this almana, if she gets divorced, onis garsha, if she gets widowed or divorced, he's going to collect on what he paid. V'mesa, but if she dies, then Yerushena Bala, her husband's going to inherit all of the money, and he's not going to get anything. So we try to figure out what that value is. Okay, so now the Gemara. So the Gemara says, 1 second. Ketzad shamin, but how do we evaluate what the witnesses were trying to do, what damage they were trying to cause? They're not trying to damage her. They were trying to damage him. They're saying that he divorced and he didn't pay the ksuba. So they're trying to create a problem for him. He now has to pay the ksuba. If you're going to evaluate it by what amount of money she could get by selling her ksuba now, that's not relevant to him. We have to find something that could give us a number about him, because it's him that they're trying to damage, not her. If they would be coming and somehow trying to damage her, then you say the damage to her now is the amount she could have sold her ksuba. She can't sell her ksuba because they're damaging her. But that's not what's happening. They're not damaging her. They're damaging him. So how do we evaluate him? So now two possibilities. Amar Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda said you have to really, the Mishnah doesn't mean what it says. What it means is beba'al. The Mishnah talking about how much someone could sell the ksuba is referring to the husband selling the ksuba. In other words, sometimes a man gets married to a woman, and of course he's not allowed to live with his wife until he promises to her, gives her a document, that in the case of death or divorce, there's going to be a payout. That's the ksuba. So sometimes he will take a field, and he'll say, this field is guaranteeing your ksuba. I want you to know I have the 200 zuz. Here we have this esrog orchard. This esrog orchard is your security to provide you with your ksuba. So that was promised. So there is a lien on this particular field for the ksuba. And now he wants to turn around and sell the field. So now, when he sells the field, there's going to be a discount on the field. If the field is really worth 100, no one's going to pay 100 because maybe they're going to lose the field. So he's going to have a discount on the field. Someone's willing to buy the field and take the risk. What's the risk? If this guy that I buy the field from divorces his wife or he dies before his wife, I'm going to lose the field and get nothing back. But if his wife dies in his lifetime, then I'm going to get to keep the field. So I'm going to take the risk. And I'll pay, because I'm going to pay a discounted number on that field. So that discounted number of what someone's willing to pay for this field, that's what they're trying to cause him to lose now. Because if they make him pay out his ksuba now, so now no one's going to buy this field, because this field's going to the ksuba. So that's the amount that they're trying to cause him to lose. That's what they have to pay. That's opinion number one. However, Rav Nassim Bar Oshia says opinion number two, we do evaluate the ksuba based on what she could get for the ksuba, be'isha, and we subtract from what she could get from the ksuba. We subtract what she could get from the ksuba from the full face value of the ksuba, and that difference is what the Edom Zomim pay. So let's say like this. His ksuba says that he's going to give her 100 silver coins. Okay, that's the promise in the ksuba. If she were to sell the ksuba to someone, no one's going to give her 100 silver coins for that right, because maybe she's going to die first, they're not going to collect anything. So, if she's going to sell the ksuba, she's only going to be able to sell it, let's say, for 40 silver coins. Because, you know, someone's going to buy it for 40 silver coins, and by buying it for 40 silver coins, he's going to take the risk that if the husband dies first, or if the husband divorces, he's going to now be able to collect the 100 silver coins, but if she dies, he's not going to collect anything. So he's willing to pay 40 coins for that risk. So the same way he's willing to pay 40 coins, the husband himself is willing to pay 40 coins. Wouldn't the husband be willing to give the wife 40 coins?
Yes,
of course. Because then, if he lives, or if he divorces, he got out of it with just 40 coins instead of giving 100 coins. So the 40 coins that she could get from somebody else, she certainly could get from the husband. So when the witnesses are coming to tell the husband, you need to pay 100 now, he was already willing to pay 40. So really what they're trying to cause him a loss of is the 60. So now that they've been made false witnesses, they need to pay the 60. So these are the two possibilities. Either we evaluate it by saying, how much would the husband get for selling the land that's dedicated for the ksuba that they're trying to ruin? Or how much would the wife get for selling the ksuba itself? And the difference between that and the full value of the ksuba is what they're trying to cause the husband to lose, and that's what they need to now pay to the husband. Amar Rav Papa added to explain explain the idea of Rav Nassan Bar Oshia. Yes, the way we evaluate what these false witnesses, the damage they're trying to cause, is Be'isha. It's by first evaluating how much money the woman could get by selling the ksuba. The husband certainly would be willing to pay that. So that's not a loss to the husband. It's the difference between that and the full value of the ksuba that the husband needs to pay. But when we talk about the full value of the ksuba, we're talking about the amount of money that the husband promised to the ksuba. We're not talking about her property that she brought into the marriage. When a woman brings property into the marriage, a husband is entitled to get the profits off of that property, but the principal remains hers, and once the marriage ends, the principal gets returned to her. So that's not included in what these witnesses need to pay, because they can claim, we never knew that the husband had any of the wife's property to deal with. Everybody who's married has to have a ksuba. And everybody knows that there's a ksuba situation, because they can't be married without that. But it's not necessarily the case that she brought in property. So that property doesn't need to be evaluated. It's not that we say, how much property did she bring in that they're trying to take away from him now? And, what's the difference between what he would pay now versus what they're trying to make him pay now. No, we just say, what's the difference between what he would pay now versus what they're trying to make him pay now? But we don't add to that the value of her property, because they can claim we didn't know that she had property, and we're not trying to cause him a loss of the property, we're trying to cause him a loss of ksuba. That's what Rav Papa said. So it's Be'isha, we evaluate it with her, ubiksubasan, and it's just evaluating her ksuba and not evaluating her property that she brought into the marriage. So that was Mishnah number one. Now Mishnah number two, again dealing with a dynamic case. How do you sort of score something? How do you evaluate something? Two witnesses come in. They say like this, Me'id Anabi Ishploni, we testify that we saw Reuven borrow from Yaakov, Shu Chayev L'Chavero Elef Zuz, he borrowed from Yaakov 1,000 coins, and Almanas Litnon Lo Mikan Vat Shloshim Yom. It was a typical loan. It was for 30 days. He has to pay back within 30 days. V'hu Omer, and Reuven screaming, what do you mean 30 days? Mikan Vat Eser Shanim, it was a 10-year loan. I had 10 years to pay back the loan. I don't want to get pressured after 30 days. You're a bunch of liars. And Reuven is screaming, you're liars. You're making me pay early. I have 10 years to play with this money. And then another set of witnesses come in and say, hey, first set, how could you say you saw Reuven borrow from Yaakov? At the time you claimed you saw what you saw, you were with us somewhere else. So now, what was the damage that they were trying to cause? He's going to have to pay, but they're saying you pay after 30 days, not after 10 years. So what's the difference? How do you evaluate that? So Om Dim, we have to make the following assessment. Kama Adam wrote Salitain, the Yu Biyado, Elef Zuz, Bain, Nosnan, Bain, Nosnan Mikan, Vad Eser Shani. How much would a person pay as a fee in order to get a loan that's going to be for 10 years minus 30 days? How much would he pay for that? If he could get a loan without paying for 30 days, how much would he pay to get a loan for another 9 years and 11 months? How much money would he pay to have so much more time with the loan? So whatever money that is, that's what they're trying to cause him to lose by making him have to have a 30-day loan instead of a 10-year loan. So that's the amount of money that they need to pay him. Okay, it's not that he would pay it, but how do you value such a thing? How much? What is it like in the market? What are the fees that people pay to get 9 years and 11 months a loan? That's a great loan. So, what would people pay to get such a good loan?
But are you allowed to charge a fee?
No, you're not. But
it's a hypothetical.
That's right.
What would the lender pay to have it repaid early?
Yeah, it's an evaluation. It's an evaluation. It's not the full value of the loan. They weren't trying to cause him to lose the loan, because they did say he has a loan. They just wanted him to pay it early, to pay it up after 30 days instead of 10 years. And the truth is, when it comes to a loan, even if you have to pay it after 30 days, if you don't have the money, there's no recourse to the lender, really, right? If somebody's totally poor, the lender can't do anything. He can't take away the things you need to live with. And that's it. So he just has to wait till you can eventually pay. He can't charge interest.
Right,
doesn't.
These are not business loans, right? Because there's no interest.
There's no interest.
So it's really the lender getting and having pleasure of making the loan. So I'm not sure how we can.
No, the lender gets the mitzvah of making the loan.
He's getting a bigger mitzvah for 10 years. So
Right, but for the borrower, right, it's certainly more comfortable to have, for the borrower, it would have been more comfortable to have a 10-year loan than to have a 30-day loan to start, you know, dealing with the uncomfortableness. So that has value. So whatever that value is, that's what they're trying to take away from him. And that's what they need to now pay to him when it's turned out that they're false witnesses. So the Gemara suggests, what do you mean it's just a value? It's the whole loan. And that's the Gemara's discussion. I'm Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda said the name of Shmuel. We know that come Shemitah, at the end of Shemitah, lenders have to forgive whatever is owed to them. So what happens if the loan is a 10-year loan? Hamal v'schaver l'eser shanim. Reuven lends money to Shimon for 10 years. He says, as for 10 years, you'll pay me back. So within 10 years, there's obviously a Shemitah. So now Shviyas, Shemitah mishamtaso. Shemitah means that Reuven has to forgive the loan, even though it's not yet due. Even though right now it's not due. So you can't say to him, don't harass your borrower, which is what the Torah says. You know, forgive the loan and don't harass your borrower. Don't harass the borrower. Of course I can't harass the borrower. It's not due yet. But since so, ultimately, at the end of the 10 years, I'll be able to harass the borrower, and then it'll be, don't harass him. Therefore, already now, the loan should be forgiven. That was the view of Shmuel. So Masiv Rav Kahana challenged Shmuel. How could you say that a 10-year loan also has to be forgiven by Shemitah? But what does our Mishnah talk about? It talks about false witnesses who are trying to prevent a 10-year loan from being a 10-year loan. They're trying to turn a 10-year loan into a 30-day loan. So the Mishnah says, what was their damage? Oh, then we have to assess. Come, Adam wrote, so Litin, how much would a person pay? In order to have 1,000 zuz in his hand, Ben Litin Mekan Vashloshim Yom, versus having it for 30 days, uvein litim mikan vad eser shanim, versus having it for 10 years. How much would a person pay to have it for the next 9 years and 11 months? Now, the Amrit, if you're going to say, shviyas mishamtaso, that within a 10-year loan, Shemitah knocks out the loan, so kulu nami boy shlumile. So now, what do you mean the witnesses pay this fee? The false witnesses should pay the full loan, because if the borrower was right that it was a 10-year loan, that means ultimately it's not going to be collected at all, because within 10 years you're going to have Shemitah. Shemitah's going to knock out the loan. When they're saying it's not a 10-year loan, it's only a 30-day loan, they're saying it's a loan that gets collected. So that they're trying to make him lose the fact that he could keep all of the money ultimately. So they should be paying the full amount of the loan. What do you mean evaluate the value of having the money for longer? Kulu boy shlumele, they should pay the full amount. Amarava, so Rava said, I can give you an answer. There are all sorts of loans that Shemitah doesn't knock out. Hacha b'mayaskinan, here, what are we dealing with? B'mao v'la mashkon. Let's say somebody lent a person money, and the borrower already gave the guarantee that's worth the value of the loan to the lender. Or if the lender signed a prusbol, he gave away the documents to the court, b'moseh shtarosov lebezdin, he gave his loan documents to the court, and then Shemitah doesn't knock out the loan. T'tanis, we learned in the Mishnah. Hamao v'la mashkon, if somebody lends money and he gets a collateral worth the full value of the loan, and he's holding on to that, so Shemitah doesn't knock out the loan. Or Amos Ishtarosov Lebezdin, or if somebody hands over his loan documents to the court, he signs the Prusbol deal, Ein Mashmitin, then Shemitah can't knock it out. So we're talking about a case where Shemitah couldn't knock out the loan. That's how we need to assess how and create a valuation for a longer-term loan versus a shorter-term loan. Ikadami, others say, a different version of this whole discussion. Rav Yehuda says the name of Shmuel, Hamal ves chaver l'eser shanim. If somebody lends his friend money for 10 years, then within 10 years you have a Shemitah. Ein shviyas mishamtaso. Shemitah's not going to knock out the loan. V'yafagav da'asi lidei lo yigos. And even though by Shemitah not knocking out the loan, ultimately the borrower is going to be harassed. But nevertheless, at the moment that Shemitah arrives, the borrower is not getting harassed because the loan's not yet due. So since the loan's not yet due, Shemitah cannot knock out the loan. I'm Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana said, all right, if that's the idea of Shmuel, that Shemitah does not knock out a 10-year loan, I can prove it from a Mishnah. Because what does the Mishnah say? When you have Edom Zomimim that are trying to turn a 10-year loan into a 30-day loan, Omdin, we have to assess, how much would a person be willing to pay in order to have 1,000 zuz in his hand for 9 years and 11 months? So how much would a person person pay to have the money for 9 years and 11 months? The Amrit, if you're going to tell me, Shvias Misham Taso, that Shemitah itself already knocks out the loan. So Kulunami Boy Shlumi. So the false witnesses, by saying that it's not a 30, by saying it's a 30-day loan, and they're, and taking away the option of Shemitah knocking it out, so they caused him to lose the whole loan. So they should pay the full amount. My Rava, so Rava said, it's not a proof. As we just answered, and I can tell you what's the case of the Mishnah, B'mal v'alamashkon, where it's a loan and already a guarantee was given, or Moshe Shteros of Lebesdin, it's a loan where the loan documents were signed over to the court, and in those cases, Shemitah doesn't knock out the loans. That's not as we went to the Mishnah, Hamal v'alamashkon, if somebody lends money with a guarantee, or Hamoser Shteros of Lebesdin, if somebody hands over the loan document to the court, Ein Mashmitin, Shemitah does not knock it out. Okay, so that completes this discussion, and now the Gemara will go on with all sorts of lessons, three lessons, from Rav Yehuda in the name of his teacher Shmuel. Number one, I'm Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel, Rav Yehuda taught a lesson in the name of his teacher Shmuel. Ha'omer l'chaveiro, if somebody lends money to his friend, and he says, here's the money, but almanas on condition, shelo tishmeteini shvius, on condition that Shemitah not knock out the loan. So then, shvius mishametes. So Shmuel's point was, Shemitah will knock out the loan, he can't collect the loan after Shemitah. So why? So Roger has it on the tip of his tongue, he says, I'll tell you why. A guy is trying to say, I'm stronger than the Torah says Shemitah knocks out the loan, his conditions can't overrule the Torah. So the Gemara says, Lema kasava Shmuel, is that really the case? Is Shmuel of the opinion, Matnal, Masha Katuv Bat Torah, when a person makes a condition against what the Torah says, whenever a person makes a condition against what the Torah says, the condition is null and void. But that doesn't make so much sense, because we learned in regards to another monetary issue, the issue of onah, overcharging. You know, if somebody overcharges by less than a sixth, that means the buyer forgives it. A sixth, the seller has to return that added sixth. More than a sixth, the whole deal is undone. And yet we learn, so Omer l'chaver, if somebody tells his friend, I'm selling you this property, but you don't have a claim of overcharging. Rav Amar Yeshlo Alavona, even though that was the condition, the guy can still claim overcharging and reverse the deal and get the money back. Shmuel Amar Einlo Alavona. Shmuel says, no, if that was the condition, that there's no claim of overcharging, there's no claim of overcharging. So that's for sure. We're not talking about property. Other things. By general, by movables. So, what do you see? Shmuel's of the opinion that you can make a condition to knock out the law of overcharging. So Shmuel should be of the opinion that you should make a condition to knock out Shemitah. Answer the Gemara that you're really not understanding that case of Shmuel correctly. Hayitmar lo, we learned on that. Amar Rav Anan, Rav Anan explained. The Dimi Fishi Lemine de Shmuel. Shmuel himself explained his law to me. Amanash ein locha alai ona, ein lo alav ona. If the person said, here, I'm selling you this property on condition that you not make a claim of overcharging to me. So then, if that's what was agreed to, that guy can't make such a claim. But if the person said, Almanash ein bo ona, on condition that there is no overcharging here, then if there is overcharging, Harayesh bo ona, the deal is reversed. So Achanami here too. When we say in regards to Shemitah, sometimes the condition works. Almanash lo tishmeteini bishvius, if he says, on condition that you not forgive me, I'm lending you the money on condition that you not try to get me to drop the loan because of Shemitah, then ain't Shvias Misham Taso. If they agreed to that, then Shemitah can't knock out the loan. But if a person didn't say, this is about you, this is about the Torah's law, my condition is overruling the Torah law, I'm lending you the money on condition that Shemitah not be able to knock out the loan, then Shvias Misham Taso, he doesn't have rights over the Torah law, then Shemitah will in fact knock out the loan. Okay, Tanur lived in a Braisa, Malvis, Kaveiro, Stam, if you just lend money without saying for how long? It's 30 days. You can't ask him for the money until 30 days pass by.